welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday evening with two of my friends in Los Angeles. First up, Dave McMenamin, our Lakers beat writer and general NBA expert. Hello, David.
Hello, Ryan.
You were at the Lakers-Suns game last night, I assume?
Can we call it a game? What are we calling these 48 minutes of inaction for the Lakers in the preseason? They have now fallen down by 30, 31, 31, and 22 in each of their four preseason games. I am not pressing the panic button because we haven't even seen the roster even looking one iota what it's going to look like because the big three hasn't played together yet. But my nut graph is it's been very bad basketball.
I call Russell Westbrook Nuke LaLouche. Some of the passes he's throwing are like hitting the bull, so to speak. I don't know how many of our listeners are going to get that reference, but
I get it. Did, and I appreciate I get
no
it.
Baseball on the Old five, Durham. But I actually did get that reference.
Okay. And that's Ramona Shelburne joining us from the San Fernando Valley. Hey, Ramona.
Hey, what's up, Bri? I love that.
You're in the Valley,
I am.
Right?
I'm at my old house. You know, I'm at my parents' house on the come over here so my son can see grandma and grandpa one day a week, you know? So nice, they actually have better Wi-Fi than I do. So better reception today.
I vowed not to talk about Ben Simmons on this podcast, but it lasted one pod and it ended. Woj had the story today, meaning Monday, that it, by the way, like by the time Woj says we're talking about him coming back, you know, he's going to come back. I don't know what the negotiation is. And by the time this gets posted, maybe we'll know more about that. The Sixers are playing the Nets in the disgruntled bowl Monday night. Kyrie, by the way, just as a quick aside, just because I talked about Ben, I might as well mention Kyrie. Kyrie practiced on Saturday and Sunday, but for some reason didn't come to Philadelphia. And I haven't seen a good explanation as to why. I think the question's been asked and there hasn't been a good explanation. So good luck figuring that one out. Dave, I wanted to ask you though. So let's assume that this is going to work out and Ben is going to come back. Now, I don't know whether he's going to play. I don't know what the terms are of this ceasefire, but you are from Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You have you haven't lived in Philadelphia in a long time, but you know Philadelphia sports. You covered the Sixers in the playoffs last year and were on site for that whole mess in the Eastern Conference Finals. What do you think will happen if/when Ben Simmons comes back into the Wells Fargo Center, whether it's in a suit, a uniform, or whatever?
Oh, he's going to be booed relentlessly. And I think the only way he'll be saved is if Joel Embiid, because he can put the finger on the scale of the Philadelphia sports fan's heart, if he like makes a public appeal saying, hey, we got to put our arms around this guy again. He's still one of us, and the past is the past. Because Embiid has been one of the ones who has been stoking the flames, dating all the way back to Game 7 against the Hawks, which is part of the reason why Philadelphia fans view Ben the way they view him right now, which is someone who can't perform in the big moments and who quit on their team.
You know Joel, Ramona. You think Joel's going to play ball like that, or what do you think?
I do, actually. I mean, I think Joel is a future general manager if he wants to be. He knows all about negotiation. He did his own contract this year. He knew all where the leverage points were and compared it to other deals. Like, you know, this guy got, you know, this 5 years max, no opt out, no this. No, I mean, no, trade kicker. Like, this guy knows where the Sixers are as a franchise. Like, he used to do that. Sam Hinkie would always tell stories about the 2 years that he sat out at the beginning of his career. Sam and Joe would sit there and talk about free agency. They would sit there and talk about, you know, players. They would sit there and talk about front office moves. And so I think Joel is essentially, he's the captain of the team, but he's also a de facto member of the front office, like knows exactly what is at stake here and what needs to happen. So I think you're right, Dave. I think that is how there's two ways Ben doesn't get booed, neither of which I think will happen. I think you get booed no matter what. But one is if Ben comes out and doesn't make culpa, right? If he comes out and says, you know what, I've thought about this. It's not you, it's me. I love Philly. I'm sorry for all this has happened. This is me needing to work on myself and my game. That I think that might help. I still think he'd get booed, but I think that would help. The other one is if Joel leans in and takes, you know, and puts his finger on the scale, as you said, Dave. Like, I do think Joe would play ball. I think it's just a question of, does Ben meet his teammates halfway? I mean, a lot's been said. You know, Joe took some daggers there was a story a couple weeks ago about Ben's done playing with Joel and he doesn't like their style together. And like, you know, that provoked an immediate response, right? As you can see, he got in front of the cameras the next day and said what he had to say. And so I think there's going to be some fence mending that's going to have to be done. But Brian, here's my 10,000 foot view of this is I don't think the peace treaty has been signed yet. I think Ben still has to get on a plane. I still think there's a few more cards that Ben and his representation can play. Let's say he shows up and says, okay, I'm here. Give me back all the fines. Give me back all that money again. Do they have to do that? He's already lost, you know, $1 million or something, whatever. It's all added up. Do they have to do that? Do they have any guarantee that he's actually going to play, that he's going to play hard, that he's not going to have a back injury tomorrow, you know? So there's a few more things that can happen here.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I could boil this down to 30 seconds, Ben Simmons said, trade me or else. The Sixers said, or else what? And they called his bluff.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't say that Ben is folding his cards, but he's, you know, I don't know where that goes in the poker.
I got you. He's short stacked now. He's short stacked, you know, like he essentially, to me, he just lost a big hand and you're still in the tournament. There's still a few cards you can play. There's still a few hands you can play. You could take a few risks. You know, whenever you're short stacked, you essentially just want to stay in it long enough to get a good hand and double up. Right. I think
look at poker. Ramona go here, Dave. Yeah.
I think this poker metaphor is pretty good. Yeah. I generally like.
I got another poker. One for you. Yeah. I'm going to evoke the 1993-94 Disney classic Cool Runnings, where Malik Yoba's character Yul Brynner was in the bar with the Swedish team or the Swiss team, I guess. And he said, "Don't touch me, or else." And then the guy said, "Or else, but Jamaica, or else, but." And then they fought. So, you know. We've been fighting. We've seen the fighting between Daryl Morey and the Sixers and Ben Simmons. I don't know. There might be some bottles broken overhead before we get to a peace treaty.
Well, you know, since we keep talking about the 90s, I guess Bull Durham was in the 80s.
was it really? Gosh, that's my favorite sports movie ever. It is so old, I guess. Wow.
Perfect script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So J.D. Drew. Got drafted by the Phillies, phenom prospect, refused to sign because they didn't offer enough money and for baseball. I'm going back to baseball again. And J.D. Drew to this day, 23 years later, Dave, is still hated in Philadelphia. Still a villain.
Actually, it's funny. I was on press row last night at that horrific Lakers Suns preseason game, and I pointed out Kyle Goon of the Orange County Register, look who that's sitting baseline, Scott Boras, J.D. Drew's agent. Why do I know who Scott Boras is? Not because I'm a baseball fan, because I still have the hate in my heart for what J.D. Drew did back then.
Right. Oh, so you're saying they're going to know who Rich Paul is 25 years?
Yeah, I think.
You know what's interesting, though, Dave?
Rich will be just happy with that, actually.
How much of this sticks to Rich, though? Like, how much of this is Rich Paul gets booed and how much of this is Ben Simmons gets booed? Because I think there's a, you know, Rich Paul has, you know, he has a large reputation because he has a lot of power in this league. But I don't know how much of this is, you know, he's working for the client here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard similar. And I think that's correct, Ramona. I think that's a fair read on the situation. And you know, Rich loses money by Ben losing money. So, I mean, his motivation would not be to go this route, I don't believe, other than his motivation is to help his client ultimately get what he wants.
So let me ask you this. How much do they like Adele in Philly, Dave? If Rich came to a Sixer game with Adele, would Rich still be booed? I say he would be booed.
It may help a little bit, though.
Yeah.
So LeBron has played like 1,500 games, including the playoffs, in his career. He has only not started one game. Do you, Dave McMenamin, know the reason
why LeBron?
Okay.
You know, I know how I learned this from you, Brian. And I can't tell as well as you can, but it was to help out a teammate. Please tell us.
So Anderson Varejao. Now, it's a different situation because Varejao didn't have a contract. We keep using the word holdout when guys don't have contracts. It's technically not a holdout. He didn't have a contract, didn't sign the Cavs offers, and ended up signing an offer sheet in December, if you can believe that. He was restricted free agent all the way to December, signed an offer sheet that the Cavs matched. So he still didn't technically sign with them. So the team was disgruntled with him, and they got off to a poor start. And even though he was a role player, they kind of blamed him. So LeBron had been out for 4 or 5 games with an injury. And so his first game back from injury was Anderson Varejao's first game after a month-long holdout for which he was somewhat vilified in Cleveland. And remember, Varejao, very much beloved player, big hair, always flopped. People love the way he played in Cleveland. You hated him if you played against him. You loved him if you played with him. And so they knew Varejao was going to get booed. So they did not start Mike Brown. It was LeBron's idea, from what I understand. Mike Brown, the coach, then brought LeBron off the bench, and because he had missed like a week and a half. And we were pretty surprised because, you know, LeBron had missed some games before due to injury. But so at the first media timeout, or the first timeout, whatever it was, Varejao comes to the scorer's table and LeBron comes with him. And the Cavs have been on a 5-game losing streak without LeBron, mimicking what happened a lot in his career. And LeBron came in the game with Varejao by design so that Andy wouldn't get booed. And I'm not so sure that type of tactic is going to work here, but I think it boils down to how accepting, if Ben shows up, how willing his teammates are to show support for him. In that setting, in the littlest ways and the biggest ways possible. And that's going to be fascinating because I don't think Ben thought this was going to happen. I think, you know, at the start of this, he thought he was going to get his second $8 million payment on October 1st. And he wasn't going to get a regular paycheck till November 15th. And those paychecks are going to be relatively small. He was going to have $16 million in his pocket, and yeah, they could fine him, but those fines were not going to really amount to much, and they would take a real long time for them to ramp up to work. Not that the fines wouldn't be a lot of money, but his checks weren't going to be big enough for them to withhold, because half of his money was up front and he was going to get, you know, smaller checks every 2 weeks. That was the strategy. Well, the Sixers, and maybe this is a mistake by Ben's side, not predicting this, but the Sixers decided to hold the money, to hold the second payment, and to deduct money out of that. And Ben, within a month here, was looking at losing all that money. And so instead of not missing money until November 15th, he started missing money October 1st. And that is a 6-week span that he was hoping to really squeeze the Sixers. So I think that maneuver by the Sixers and their unwillingness, or, you know, their steadfastness in keeping their trade demands high, I think is resulted in the Sixers sort of being able to declare victory here. But really the Sixers need to, and Doc Rivers needs to find a way, if he's actually going to suit up and play, to get that somewhat kumbaya moment that LeBron was willing to show to Varejao to welcome him back. That's what I think. I don't know how it's possible, Ramona, because Ben is the type of guy who does need support, but isn't necessarily the guy who's willing to, you know, lean into the hug, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I also think you can be professional. Like, you can be in a locker room with people that he's still a really good player. And I think, you know, even on the eve of camp, half his team was willing to fly out to LA and try to, you know, do the point. Are we going to do a John Cusack Say Anything reference, or can we do the, you know, the, since we're going 80s or 90s movies, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to stand out there with a radio out front of his house in LA. And he told him not to come. But like, I think from a business perspective, like you can show up and be professional. You can show up and play. It's just a matter of, you know, is his heart going to be in it? Is his head going to be in it? I don't know.
Having been professional would have been showing up to training camp and just.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. But I think players generally have sympathy for other players. Like, it doesn't matter. What's the worst thing you can do to another player? Take money out of their pocket, ruin their reputation, you know, whatever it is. Nobody's really been hurt here except for Ben's money. He hasn't taken anybody else's money yet.
Right.
I mean, there's the internal team dynamics, right? But.
Well, yeah, but like Joel Embiid has done everything he can to get his body in a place to be able to perform at a high level. He is smack dab in the middle of his prime. He signed an extension with Philadelphia under the understanding that he was in position to contend alongside another guy who's commanding a max contract, who's going to be on the court with him and into it. And not just showing up, actually be there. I mean, James Harden was on the court last year for the Rockets before he ended up in Brooklyn, but he wasn't really on the court. And so I think we have to wait and see what Ben Simmons is actually present with Philadelphia.
If he called you today, Ben, I'm sure he would definitely consult with you. If Ben called you today, what would you recommend to him to do? Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
If your heart's not in it, then keep pushing your money to the middle of the table.
I mean, his leverage was, I'm willing to miss paychecks. His leverage was, I can go all year. It's never about the money. Well, you can say it's never about the money until you actually start not getting the paycheck. And I think there was this assumption that he was, well, when he finally gets traded, he'll get the money back. It's almost, you know, anybody who's bought a house knows what an escrow account is, right? You put a bunch of money in an escrow account. They say, okay, we'll take it out of that account. And at the end, usually it's like 6 months later. It's not even right away. It's like 6 months later. They go, okay, hey, you have $3,600 left in your escrow account. You're like, cool. Christmas came early, right? Because you don't know what was left out of the closing costs or whatever else it was. I think that's kind of what the expectation was. Well, I'm not getting the paycheck, but I'll get it eventually. And I've made enough money and I can sit and, you know, let them keep my money. Right. And I think there was some clarity. I think it was, Brian, was that you and Bobby who wrote the story? Tim and Bobby wrote that story saying, no, that's really not how the league and the Players Association are going to enforce this. It's more like when you get fined, you pay money into an account and that goes to usually NBA charities. Right. I think that's how this is going to go. And you don't necessarily get that money back. Now, some of the fines can be forgiven, but not missed game checks.
So, yeah. So really, but with Ben, if indeed he comes back, he is giving up leverage. So how, if I were him and Rich Paul, I would say, all right, we're giving up leverage because of, you know, basically probably money. What can we do? What is in our options that we can regain that leverage. And the really simplest way for me to see where he could regain leverage would be to just play awesome. Now, other people might say, and I know other people will say, that he should do the exact opposite and do the Harden. Basically make himself such a pain that they have to get rid of him. And maybe that's what he will do.
You could do the Jimmy Butler, right? You could do the,
yeah, do the Jimmy. I don't think it's really in his, in his personality, but if he goes out there and just goes full tilt.
Because when he said, "You need me," like Jimmy did, they'll be like, "Actually, yeah, we needed you in Game 7 to take that wide open layup. Like that would have helped us."
Yeah. Yeah. So I
love that we have Dave on the pod today. That's like Philly down. I love it. Every time we need the voice of Philly, I can hear the pulse of the city. It's
and
great.
Really on the Philly meter, Dave's pretty low. I mean,
oh man.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the weatherman on NBC 10 in Philly, Glenn Hurricane Schwartz, took some shots at Ben Simmons, which was just chef's kiss. It's Philly in a nutshell.
Yeah, he could just tell I don't think the anchor knew it was coming. She didn't know what to say. She was just like, "So are we going to see some sun this weekend?" Well, Hannah, wait a second. I got something I got to get off my chest.
Ben is paid really handsomely. He's 25 years old, I believe, and that's a lot to go through and to struggle publicly the way he has. That has to take a huge toll. But to me, if he's made the decision that he doesn't want to be there, that's the only reason I say, carry it through, because you will be able to get it carried through. We, all three of us, could name 3 or 4 superstars in his same salary range that we could see getting moved this season. And we don't need to name names and feed aggregators, but we all know those names.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen at some point. And so it's gut check time.
Well, but again, the way he plays that into possibility is to play great. And,
sure.
It would be amazing. It would be a movie if he came out and started raining threes. We know that's, we know that's not going to happen. But
it would be amazing.
It would be kind of trolling if he got the first possession. I mean, this is assuming he even plays. I don't even know if he's going to play. One of the things that people in the league I talked to said is he should have held in from the start, which is show up and not play.
And I'll go back.
How trolling would it be if his first possession, he went down and took a three?
That would be great trolling. It would be amazing.
That's what we'll really miss Mark Zumov being off the calls. I need Mark Zumov on that call.
I go back to the one holdout. It wasn't even a holdout. It was just a threatened holdout. Okay. But it lasted for several months. It's Kobe Bryant in 2007, went on every radio station in LA, went and did a million interviews and said, I'll never play for the Lakers again. I'd rather play on, was it Pluto or Mars? I can't remember what planet
Pluto.
He said. Pluto. And
Dave doesn't forget these things.
No, it's important. It's a whole different planet, you know? And I remember standing there at training camp, I think it was media day, and we're all standing in the parking lot. We used to do that. Remember day we'd stand in the parking lot and see if, which cars would show up. Now they have it all blocked off. You can't go in the players area, but you stand there and is Kobe going to show up? And all the cameras are standing there and he actually showed up and he was there for media day. And later on, we kind of got the blow by blow of how Dr. Buss basically said, "Hey, I know you want to be traded and I understand your request, but we can't get anything of value for you that is anywhere close to what we need." And they had that trade for Chicago with Chicago for Luol Deng, and the Lakers, Kobe always would say, I was looking at property in Chicago. I was looking for houses there. He was that far. He really thought that trade would happen, but the Lakers held firm and said, "We just can't do this. I'm sorry, but we're going to look for a trade in season to upgrade the team around you. And you just got to be patient." And he showed up for work.
Luol Deng a decade later, don't you worry.
For a whole lot more, not a whole lot
he's
worse.
He's still on the books, by the way.
He won MVP that season. Think about that. He won MVP that season.
I know.
Of all the years he played in the league, that's the year he wins MVP.
Yeah. I mean, Daryl Morey's Aaron Rodgers reference might be, it might end up being true. I mean, it's not when he said it, it was kind of wishful thinking, but it's also not unprecedented. And I've seen it, like, well, Kobe showed up. And then, he went through camp. Andrew Bynum gets good. Remember, Andrew Bynum just took a huge step forward. Mm-hmm. They pull this rabbit out of a hat and trade for Pau Gasol in February and go to the finals that year. Like, this does happen.
It happened with Dwight Howard, too. Dwight Howard demanded a trade from the Orlando Magic.
Yep.
There was this 3 or 4 days in training camp where everything was very cold. His teammates basically wouldn't talk to him. You know, nowadays, like, the media apparatuses of the teams protect players under, you know, under duress. They, like, you know, like Kyrie, Kyrie probably won't talk to the media for 6 to 10 weeks. And it's allowed by the NBA because in Adam Silver's NBA, players do whatever they want. There's no repercussions. They do whatever they want. And, but back then they like made Dwight talk to the media every day. And like the media guys like just didn't care. Like there was all these questions and they didn't step in to help at all. They were like done with Dwight. And then they made an organizational decision. I remember I was covering training camp. They made an organizational decision. And let's just say that without, even though it was a long time ago, I don't want to reveal exactly what happened. Let's just say I was pulled aside and told, we are not trading Dwight Howard. And everything changed in that one day. And I don't think it was Dwight's decision. They just were like, hey, Dwight, by the way, we're just not going to trade you right now. And it was basically the Kobe playbook. It was, you know, we're not going to trade you. Now, eventually, Dwight later opted into his contract and pretended like he wanted to be there and then asked to be traded again a year later. And that's when they traded him to the Lakers. But that strategy worked then, too. Like, Dwight stayed and played and for at least a little while was happy in Orlando. So, I would not bet that that's the way it goes, but it's not like we have to go back to the 1970s to find a time when a team just rejecting a trade demand has worked. And in Kobe and Dwight's case, they didn't hold out. They didn't have their teammates publicly going after him like this, but I'm not betting that it would go this way again, but I do think that there is some path, especially if he plays well, where this could fade to the background, at least for a little while, and take some of the pressure off. And he takes the pressure off by A, playing, and B, playing well. And
ask Markelle Fultz about stuff falling to the background in Philly. I don't know. I don't see it.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, David. Maybe you're probably right. You're probably right. But if he goes out and has a, you know, if some, he's not, I don't think he's going to start the season, but let's just say he comes and plays in 2 weeks and he has a triple double in the first game. And they win. Are you saying they're going to still boo him at the end of the game?
No, I agree. Winning cures all. It's a cliche, but it's so true. And we've all seen it on teams we've covered.
All right. So before we go, I wanted to ask you guys a bit about the drama in early hitting the Lakers. And I'm not talking about their record in the preseason or Russell Westbrook's turnovers, which are heading towards quintuple double territory. They announced today that Talen Horton Tucker is having surgery or had surgery on his thumb. Now, one thing I'll say about this thumb ligament, it's a common basketball injury. It happens, been happening to guys for decades, and it's typically a 6-week injury. Maybe depending on the tear, it's 4 to 6 weeks. Dave, did they announce a timetable for return?
No, they have not. I heard it being framed as a minor procedure, and one estimation was in that time range you just mentioned. Now, yeah, of course, yeah. What, since when is there I degrees of term. Surgery? There's surgery. Yeah. Or
minor, I love that term, yeah. Surgery. Yeah, right. I love that term, minor surgery.
But yeah, I don't think there's any reason to start looking at like, oh, we're going to lose him for the season or anything like that. No, but yeah, no. There's opportunity if you want to go glass half full and say, well, they had a bit of a redundancy at the wing anyway. Now there's opportunity for
redundancy is one way to put it. another way to put it is they threw a lot of stuff at the wall and hoping a couple stick.
But there you go.
But
that's why you have, you field 14 guys to play 5 positions at any one time. And there's going to be the opportunity to, you know, now you get Ken Bazemore more minutes. Now you get, would be it Kendrick Nunn, be it Wayne Ellington, because yeah, Talen can play the 1, 2, and the 3, you know, yeah, he plays the 1, 2, and 3.
So Ramona, so it's not just losing Horton Tucker for 4 to 6 weeks. Let's just say 6 weeks, I think. It's also that Trevor Ariza has already, this is two surgeries now for Laker wing players in the season. Ariza had ankle surgery. Again, minor ankle surgery, right? But this is a guy who's like 36, 37, has barely played the last 2 years. Maybe he'll be fine, but that's two surgeries on Laker wing players. Is this something or nothing? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, Dave wrote this in his news or two, but Malik Monk's out with a groin injury, right? I mean, that's another week. Those were supposed to be the young guys who were supposed to spell the old guys, right? Like that was the you know, part of the point of this roster was, okay, we have a lot of old guy veterans and, you know, they all keep themselves in really good shape. But generally speaking, the older players get hurt more and they need some load management. So the young guys who are supposed to play all these minutes are out. That's problematic. But I also think I was just disappointed to read it for Talen because I know this was a big early season for him. They have a fairly, I think, a pretty favorable schedule, wouldn't you say, Dave? Their first 10, 15
after
games.
After the first three games. Yeah. First three games are all kind of tough, but then they have a runway where they can stack up some wins.
Yeah, there's like 5 or 6 games, a couple against the Thunder, the Rockets. There's like a, and you know, last year, awful. They're not insulted if you say that, Brian, either.
No.
I think there was this beginning part of the season where like Talen Horton Tucker is really good, but he also needs more seasoning. And this part of the year would have been a good time to get that. Like this would have been a good time to say, all right, you go out there and play 38 minutes in those 5 games, you know, like just give him a lot of room. And just developmental time that he doesn't get to have. And especially early in the season when they could really use it. Cause the point of, you know, Talen is not just for this year, but if you're on a team like this, it's hard for a young player to get a lot of minutes, especially meaningful minutes. So these would have been,
but he has to, you know, he was going to be a starter, right, Dave? I mean, he's going to be a starter.
I'm not saying with the degree of certainty you say it. I think at some point in the season he would have been a starter, but I'm not sure they had decided on him opening night.
Could be. Yeah. I would just say that here's the thing that I've been saying, and Dave, I'll see if you agree with me. I've been saying here, I'm not judging the Lakers till Christmas, and I might even push that back.
We're in lockstep on that.
Okay. So all I'm saying here is let's say the Lakers, I mean, they look sluggish because they haven't had time together. I get it. Like, let's say even with that easy schedule, let's just say now they're banged up. Let's say they don't get off to a great start. And Russell Westbrook, the last two teams he got traded to, they didn't get off to a good start. You know, let's say that they come out sluggish and they take some losses. And then next thing you know, people are talking about Frank Vogel. And I'm just saying, like, it's almost like it should be an imperative issue to the Laker Nation. Just take it easy with this team, because you got Melo coming out and saying stuff like, if we don't win the title, it would be like the 2004 Olympic team losing, you know, to losing the gold medal. And I was just like, I would just stay away from stuff like that. Because I just don't, they're posing for these photos with the 6 Hall of Famers. And it's just like, oh my gosh, the super team. And I'm just like, everybody take it easy. I mean, Ramona, what do you think the vibe is there? Do you think that people are really expecting them to come blasting out of the gates? Or do you think there is a realistic understanding about how tough it is going to be to put this together?
We're talking about the same Laker fans, Brian.
That's what I'm saying. I can see what's going to happen. I can see what's going to happen.
Laker fans think they're never going to lose. I mean, and they're very excited. I mean, and I actually think, I read Melo's quotes a little differently. I think he is very excited to be on a team that has a chance to win right now. And, you know, by all accounts, I think there's a sense of accountability going on with the players. Like if you say, it reminds me almost of 2 years ago, Dave, where people came out of the gate saying, you know, and holding accountability, like even Anthony Davis after that first game, he's like, we can get a lot better. We didn't play very well. We can get a lot better. I mean, it was just he played what, 8 minutes in that game or something. And I think they're really, there's a sense among the veterans on this team that they want to put it out there so that they have to live up to it. Right. There's a sort of holding each other accountable and putting out those goals, and they don't care what we in the media think or fans think or whatever it is. It's like, they're doing it for themselves because they really want to win. I mean, it just really feels like they're setting that bar for themselves, which is a really good place for a team like this to start. But you're right, Brian. I mean, like if they get off to a horrible, I mean, I think their schedule looks
fairly easy once you get start. But if there's people out there thinking they're going to win 60 some games and they start out, you know, 5-5 or 5-7 or something like that, I mean, I just think that people are going to be freaking out. And I'm just saying, don't freak out.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Yeah, I mean, this should be something that is granted to LeBron James at this point of his career, where we've seen him be 19 and 20 in his athletic prime with the Cavs. We saw him be, 8-7 in his first year of the Heat, 9-8. You know, we've seen this. It's going to take some time. Obviously, he's found out ways to get teams to the very top of the mountain, if not one step away being in the finals. And so I have patience with it. I think the bigger challenge is on Frank Vogel's doorstep, because he likes to say it's a good problem to have, but he does have redundancies at some positions, and the guys are saying the right things about wanting to be here just to be a part of it and figure it out as a group. But let's say Trevor comes back healthy and they're winning. Like, is there a role for Trevor Ariza? Is that window closed? And I'm not trying to single Trevor out. Any one of these players, if they have a time where they get hurt or they go out of the lineup, or Frank finds a group of nine that works and you happen to be number 9.5, you might not play for a couple weeks. And last year, a team coming off the NBA championship, a team that had all the confidence in the world, they had issues with several players on their roster who felt like they should have been getting more playing time or get a bigger role. And it led to, some tension with that group.
And what I would say too is, like, last year with the Lakers, I think they just started on a bad foot. One, everybody was cranky because they didn't get enough of a break. But two, like the trade for Schroeder, where he immediately, the first thing out of his mouth is, I'm going to start. I thought that was really bad tone to set, you know, like you just trade for this guy, and it's a team that had just won a championship. And I know that it was important for him in his career, and he had a big contract waiting for him. At least he thought he did. But that was not the spirit that the team had the year they won, right? Like, the year they won, they had Dwight Howard on a non-guaranteed deal, which was his idea, so he could prove to people he was serious about doing all the little things, you know, doing all the rebounding and defense and just not worrying about his playing time. You just had guys who really bought into their role. And then they went out and upgraded talent-wise, but, you know, they got Marcus Gasol or Andre Drummond later in the year, where those are proud veterans who've started on every other team they've been on. And it's really hard to put them in a position where, like, you know, it was sort of 2 out of 3, right? So it was going to be two of the three centers every night. So it was going to be Trez and Gasol, or it was going to be Drummond and Gasol, or Gasol or Trez and Drummond. And
well, yeah,
if I it mean, was Harold your, took, that was not your, yeah.
Harold took what he thought was a below market contract to go, you know, win a title with the Lakers and then get paid, and neither happened. And, you know, he was, you know, they didn't play him that much at times.
So. And, you know, sometimes I think that's just the individual players involved. Sometimes I think they just, you know, you don't have the same hunger and the same self-sacrificing nature when you are coming off a title. The other side of it is it was a COVID year, so there's not a lot of time for team bonding. There's not a lot of time for connecting and smoothing that kind of stuff out like you have this year. It was just, that was a bad year. I mean, Dave, doesn't it feel like if you close
your eyes? Yeah, I mean, the overarching feel, I completely agree with you. Yeah. The overarching feel, that's how you sum up that year. There's alchemy to every roster. And
ooh, Phil Jackson word. Sounds, I like that. That's a Zen master word.
I think this team has the potential to have all the pieces fit, but that's a heavy lift for their head coach. And for his sake, I hope there continues to be buy-in, because this is not going to be a linear process for this team. They are going to have a sinusoidal run, and I think they have a very good chance to hit their stride. And I think that their main competition in the opposing conference is all over the map as well. And so they should have that, like, go to bed at night, I play for the best team in the NBA type of confidence. But they're going to have to work to actually have that come to fruition.
And what do you think the vibe of the team is right now?
I think it's a little laissez-faire, which I think is okay. LeBron and Russ have both
classic
basically
veteran.
Scoffed.
That's a classic veteran team thing.
Yeah, they scoffed at the notion that there could be anything to worry about before they've actually played a real game, which generally I am in complete agreement with. But it doesn't mean that this team has an easy path. It has a wider window for error than some of the teams LeBron's played on. It's gone far. But, with all the potential, there are also pitfalls that you could point to, and we'll see how it plays out. I mean, you need luck on teams that win championships too. And so far, luck hasn't been on their side with these early injuries.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for the LA viewpoint, guys, Ramona and Dave. Thanks for listening to Collective. We will be talking to you later this week.